Welcome everyone to the final episode of this season, you could say. It's technically a season. Actually, I'll probably make it a season. We will be using a completely new approach after the end of this episode. I will introduce it next weekend, and we will probably post the first speech the weekend after. I don't think that one's really going to be a speech, though, because my first essay was not very good. The issue I have with it is that it's more philosophical. It's more like Aristotle, like the translated Aristotle, works of Aristotle, than it is a speech. So it's going to be bland. It's not going to be bland because it's going to be political, so it won't be terrible, but the other ones won't be like that. The other ones will be far deeper, far more meaningful, and much more emotional. Because that's a goal of the speech. The best way to appeal to an audience is to appeal emotion. Emotion is stronger than logic, unfortunately. But it works. As long as you're appealing something good, and you are able to appeal emotion along with that good thing, your speech will be pretty effective. That's my personal opinion. But yeah, so this is our last episode. We are going to be discussing astrophotography. It's an interesting kind of photography in that you don't spend $10,000, but you spend $100,000. It's just an interesting thing in general, and you'll see why. For a little over a year, as of December, I have been a member of a local astronomy club. With a large membership and a lot of funding, the club has a very sizable observatory, once so large that it is considered one of the largest amateur observatories in the world. We have two 18-inch Dobsonian telescopes, a 14-inch Schmidt Cassegrain that I use basically every time I'm there for imaging, two 12.5-inch Newtonians, a 10-inch and a 9.25-inch Schmidt Cassegrain, a 100mm apochromatic refractor, a bunch of loner scopes. We have a lot of mirrors. We have a lot of old telescopes. We have just a ton of cool stuff there. I haven't even seen everything yet, and I'm a key holder. Well, observing is the most popular endeavor for our members. Astrophotography is a close second. Our two most advanced telescopes are the home for the brilliant images, many of which are even top picks on Astrobin. I am a key holder, meaning that I have access to the facilities, and I host at the Astronomical Society. As an imager, I generally use our apochromatic refractor, the StellarView SVQ100 f5.8 astrograph, and what we call G-scope. It's our club's 14-inch Celestron Edge HD telescope. It's huge. It has a 0.7x focal reducer for obvious reasons. the refractor is a wide-field telescope, meaning that I can image, for the most part, only relatively large deep-sky objects, not small ones, so I would think the Whirlpool Galaxy or the Dumbbell Nebula, for example. However, the 14-inch Schmidt Cassegrain on the second floor of the building, we call our control room, has a 3,910mm focal length, or 3.91m focal length. It basically allows us to take images of objects that are really small, like the Starburst Galaxy, for example, Messier 82. I put a link in the bibliography that features an image of the Starburst Galaxy taken by that particular telescope at our observatory. Once I learned how to use this telescope, I wanted to learn how to use the 14-inch immediately. And my dream has recently come true. As of December 4th, the day that this is supposed to post, I have been educated on G-scope for slightly over 3 months now, and we just installed a new camera, so we have some pretty advanced technology now. Let's just say it that way. We're doing pretty good. Now I'm able to image extremely small objects in the night sky. Actually, I imaged the Dumbbell Nebula recently. It's a small planetary nebula. It's pretty big for a planetary nebula, pretty small for a big nebula. But yeah. In this episode, astrophotography, or the imaging of the skies of the night sky, will be discussed. While astrophotography is infamous for being arguably the most difficult and expensive hobby outside of maybe hardcore aviation, it is only difficult if one makes it difficult, that is by spending $50,000 and dealing with ASCOM. In retrospect, the hobby is reasonably inexpensive if one strives for portability and simplicity. For example, I have a reasonably large astrophotography setup that cost me so far around $2,300. And I still produce with it quality images of the Milky Way and the Andromeda Galaxy and Pleiades. I have spent maybe $2,500 to $3,000 overall in like 7 or like 10 years maybe between the cameras, the lenses, and everything to produce the images I make. Though I have to go to dark sites or use my god-awful filters every time I image, I've spent only $3,000. That's not as much as you think over 10 years. I mean, $300 a year, I mean, it's a lot, but it's not insane. I do have friends that have spent well over $50,000 on their setups. Actually, many of them have spent more like $100,000. But there are advantages and disadvantages to both an expensive and inexpensive system. Inexpensive systems are a lot more advanced and much harder to run, kind of. I think it's kind of level because there are a lot of really nice software in the very advanced stuff. Like the Sky 10. I wish I had the Sky 10 because I could just loot any object with my Skyguider Pro. I would love that because it is so hard to frame objects. When it's 10 degrees out, you do not want to be framing objects outside. It sucks. It's terrible. It's really bad. It's not fun. But astrophotography, in short, is defined as the imaging of deep sky objects, celestial events like solar eclipses, transits, conjunctions, etc., portions of the night sky, among other things. With long exposure imaging, astrophotography allows the human eye to see stars, galaxies, nebulae, and even planets that were once unknown. Astrophotography, specifically amateur astrophotography, receives significant criticism for producing pretty pictures with research telescopes. Instead of researching, astrophotographers make colorful lollipop images. And yeah, they do. The criticism is justified, though many astrophotographers, specifically the serious ones, image for both research and pretty pictures. I do agree with the pretty picture criticism, no question. For many, including myself, in only a few years, spend obscene amounts of money to buy telescopes that could qualify as research telescopes, and cameras that undoubtedly do qualify as scientific cameras, because scientific cameras are not as expensive as scientific telescopes, because scientific telescopes are generally a meter in diameter, and that's a $500,000 telescope. But the cameras, you can get a scientific level camera for $1,500, which is really, in astrophotography, that's cheap. That is like nothing. That's like pocket change in astrophotography. But they spend obscene amounts of money to buy these, and they just to receive like the astronomy picture of the day by NASA or the Astrobin image of the day, for example. A deep sky astrophotography requires a telescope, of course, to produce even semi-acceptable images, and it needs a good telescope. There are many routes one can take to produce these semi-acceptable images. Each route is, of course, not cheap, but some routes are more expensive than others. Yeah, just wait. Four telescope types will be discussed below. The apochromatic refractor, the Newtonian reflector, the Schmidt-Cassegrain, and the Ritchie-Creighton. All telescopes that are to be examined have been discussed in greater detail in previous episodes, particularly episode number 55. So that would be a long time ago, because this is 63. There, the mechanics of each telescope type were discerned in vivid detail. And of course, this will be vivid detail. For wide field, as in like 250 to 1000 millimeter images, the best telescope choice is the apochromatic refractor. A refracting telescope, an apochromatic refractor is a refracting telescope that uses lenses, of course, to create an images, to create an image that uses something called an apochromatic lens, which improves spherical and chromatic aberration better than other refractors. Refractors. All those words are really hard to say. Reflector is easy, refractor is not easy. Refractors are the best telescopes for beginner astrophotographers because they do not require many accessories outside of camera equipment and mount-related items, which don't have anything to do with the telescope. Sometimes. Once you get into the larger sensor sizes, yeah, it does, but as of now, no. I don't think there's a big issue. And a good thing about the refractor is that unlike Newtonian reflectors, they do not require collimation when switching location. Reflectors, especially in astrophotography, often require collimation even without switching locations. While apochromatic refractors are generally the simplest imaging telescopes to use, and the ones that produce the best wide-field results, they become hideously expensive with apertures larger than 150 millimeters. That's only 15 centimeters, or 0.15 meters. That's not that much. For example, a 160 millimeter bino refractor, that's just two refractors in one setup, and it's a visual setup, is $27,310. They don't even sell. They don't even sell refractors that large. Like, they don't even sell apochromatic ones because they're ridiculously expensive. I mean, they do. Like, you can get 139-10s, you can get 150, 150-750s, but they're expensive. Even after 100 millimeters, it gets expensive. And yes, you are purchasing two telescopes, but $27,310 is still very expensive. And what would that be, like $13,655 for each of them? Yeah, that's not cheap. Due to lens sagging, refractors cannot be any larger than a meter. A few amateur-owned telescopes that are larger than 10 inches are pure refractors, actually. At the 1 meter range, my narrow field telescope is going to be a 1 meter Ritchie Creighton or a CDK. However, I will use the 1,000 millimeter scope for research and astro imaging, not only astro imaging. But the 1 meter range Ritchie Creighton telescopes, these are telescopes that are a variation of the reflector, achieve the best results. For refractors that do not implement Petzval lenses, lenses that will flatten the fields. One needs a field flattener. You do need it, trust me. A field flattener reduces field curvature and aberration that elongates stars at the edges of a refractor's field. When I considered my first imaging telescope, I was split between the William Optics Red Cat 51 and the William Optics Zenith Star 61. Sorry, I considered the fact that the Red Cat 51 had a Petzval lens, while the Zenith Star 61 did not. The Zenith Star did have a 360mm focal length, much greater than the Red Cat 51's 250mm focal length. But I did end up choosing the Red Cat 51 to avoid the field flattener, a suffocatingly expensive accessory. The Zenith Star 61 is initially cheaper than the refractor and the Red Cat, but with the field flattener it's about the same. And also, I don't really have the mount to do astrophotography at 360 millimeters, so I think that's going to be something that's going to have to wait. And most likely, I'd end up getting like the Red Cat 71 or some of those other William Optics APOs because they're really nice refractors. And I could always sell my Red Cat 51 for like $700, so I'd always be able to get most of the money back. That's a long-term kind of thing, though. My next purchase will likely be a mount. I'm planning on either this Celestron AVX or an EQ6R Pro. It really all boils down to cost. I have to see how much money it's going to be for me to go to college next year. I'm skipping my senior year of high school to do dual enrollment, basically. So basically skipping my senior year, but like de facto, Because I won't be at school, but I'll be at a college. But I'll still technically be part of the school. It depends on how much money I have, because I want to be able to pay for college. If I have enough to keep working throughout the year and do all that, I'll probably buy the EQ6R Pro. Most likely, I'll buy it used. At like $1,200. It's expensive, but I could probably pay $800 of it easily anyway, because I'll have enough money for that. But it's completely dependent on how everything goes. I still have to buy filters, and I need to get my guide scope set up anyway. So we have a long way to go anyway. So we'll see. It's one of those like we'll see kind of things. But yeah, that's why I chose the Red Cat 51 instead of the Zenith Star 61. In the future, I would probably choose Red Cat 71, which is like 350 millimeters or something, or a larger telescope. I'd probably go to about 500 millimeters. But again, with the Celestron AVX, I can't imagine that I'm going to be able to get anything like that. For wide field to mid field images, not including the RCT, for it is a variation of the reflector is a very nice option. Because the entire back or non-reflective side of the mirror can be used to support the mirror, this sagging of the mirror is not an issue, unlike with lens sagging in refractors. The Newtonian reflector requires generally two mirrors, the primary and secondary mirrors, to create an image. The primary mirror captures light directly from the sky and is located at the back end of the tube. This mirror reflects the light toward the secondary mirror, a slanted block of glass, that reflects the light it receives to the eyepiece slit. There are several advantages, in my opinion, that deem the reflector superior to the refractor. By nature, there is no chromatic aberration and limited spherical aberration in a reflector, unlike in a refractor. Reflectors do not require apochromatic lenses, which are extremely expensive, and consequently, at every aperture, reflectors are less expensive than refractors. A shorter focal ratio is easier to obtain, allowing for a wider field of view. A mounting system for a reflector can be more compact, because the reflector's eyepiece is located at the top end of the tube, so there's a greater balance of gravity. Not an advantage by nature, but the secondary mirror and its support system, known as a spider, cause diffraction spikes and reduce contrast in the images. Reduced contrast is not necessarily a good thing, but diffraction spikes are good. They, in my opinion, they add to an image's beauty. You can check the bibliography for an example of diffraction spikes in an image. But, however, there are also several disadvantages that deem the reflector inferior to the refractor. Chromatic aberration is rampant. Reflectors require these things called coma correctors, equipment that resolve coma by adding reverse coma into an image. The lower the focal ratio, the greater the coma. There are also diffraction spikes and decreased contrast. You can consider them disadvantages. Reflectors also require collimation virtually every time they are transported, which really complicates the setup process. Fortunately, collimation on a reflector takes only a few minutes, and it may be necessary on fixed setups. Some advanced astrophotographers, including some that I know, collimate every night before imaging. For the movement of the telescope or any odd shock that could occur can cause the primary and secondary mirrors to misalign. There are some accessories, only two, that the reflector needs, kind of. Really, only one is extremely important, but the other one is half important. And this is one thing that you would need anyway, even with a refractor. You would just need it for cameras. The reflector does need a coma corrector. This is very specific to the reflector, not anything else. A piece of equipment that mitigates chromatic aberration by applying a reverse coma to the edges of the telescope's field. Some reflectors include it, but most that I've seen do not. Many of the more expensive ones, the more high quality ones, they do. But generally, you're going to need a coma corrector. A reflector also needs some sort of cleaning equipment, for the open design allows dust to enter the tube very easily. A Schmidt-Cassegrain telescope is a catadioptric telescope, a telescope that incorporates both lenses and mirrors into its structure. The SCT, an acronym for Schmidt-Cassegrain telescope, is compact, allowing a great focal length in a small tube. Our club's 14-inch Celestron Edge HD is an SCT with a focal length of 3,910 millimeters. And SCT's cost per aperture is even lower than the reflectors, which is truly surprising because it incorporates both mirrors and lenses. And the reason why is because the tube is significantly shorter. It's more compact. It's actually, in a way, easier to create. The final notable astrophotography telescope type is the Ritchie Creighton telescope. It's also known as RCT. It's a variant of the SCT that is not a catadioptric telescope, but a reflector telescope. The SCT uses a hyperbolic, not parabolic, primary mirror and secondary mirror that are designed to eliminate chromatic aberration. Compared to other reflector telescopes, RCTs have wider fields of view, and they are basically free of optical distortion, which is good. But I don't like the RCT, or not, I like the RCT, but I don't like the SCT. RCT, there are a lot of advantages to the RCT. The one big difference with the RCT, though, is that it's generally more expensive. There are a lot of other types of telescopes, like the CDK, the IDK. Those are very similar to the RCT, but one of the issues is that they're expensive, very expensive. That you're getting into $8,000 to $15,000 telescopes alone. And generally, the main aim is to say that you should always spend the most money on a mount, not on a telescope. So if I were to buy an RCT, I'll give you an example. One of my friends just bought a $10,700 IDK, which is basically one of those variations of the reflector. You want to spend more money on the mount than on anything else. The goal is to spend more money. So to spend more, yes, actually that's true. The goal is to spend more money. But the goal is to spend more money on the mount than on the telescope. So you would want to get, for example, an Astrophysics 1600 GTO, which is $13,600. Or you could get, an 1100 is like 12,000, so that would still fit. Another thing I'd think is that, or maybe even like the plane wave, like what is that, like the L600. Those are really high quality direct drive mounts. Those are really, really fun. They have insane slew speeds, and I would definitely love to use one of those. They're really high quality telescopes, no question. They're very nice telescopes. The one thing about them is that they're expensive. Those are more expensive. They're along the 20,000 range. Yeah. The cheapest ones cannot hold. It could probably hold enough for that telescope because it's 50 pounds and the minimum weight, or the top imaging weight, is like 100 pounds. They don't have counterweights, so remember that. It's like 100 pounds, and with imaging gear, it's probably another 20 pounds, so you're about 70% of the weight limit, which is, you want to be about two-thirds of the weight limit, generally, unless you have a really small mount and you just really want to pack it on, which is kind of what I did. I'm going to have to get a new mount soon. But, yeah, that's basically what it is. There are several pieces of equipment that are all but necessary for even the most basic astrophotography. Because Sirius, as in willing to spend more than $0 specifically for astrophotography, astrophotography incorporates tracking systems. Necessary hardware will include tracking mounts. Being that astrophotography is photography, a camera is the most necessary component. Any camera can be used for astrophotography, a phone camera with night mode, for example, a DSLR camera with a 50mm lens, or a cooled ZWO ASI 6200mm Pro, a $4,000 camera. All of them can be used for astrophotography. A popular camera type in basic yet more dedicated astrophotography is the modified camera. Modified cameras have sensors that are more sensitive to specific wavelengths of light, specifically those on the red end of the visible spectrum. Most nebulae emit visible light at the hydrogen alpha emission spectrum line. I believe that is when when electrons in a hydrogen travel from the third energy level down to the second energy level. Chances are it's probably 3s to 2s. Yeah, chemistry. Modded cameras can replace the normal DSLR filter with a filter that takes in all red light to the edge of the visible spectrum. Or they can replace the normal DSLR filter with a clear filter, which allows the camera to take in all wavelengths of light, including infrared and ultraviolet radiation, which is, I have one of those. I have a full spectrum modified version of the Canon EOS Rebel T3i. If I wanted to get an infrared filter, I could take pictures in infrared. Popular modded camera models include the EOS Rebel T3i, EOS Rebel XSi, the Canon 60DA, and the Canon EOS RA. Canon actually makes astrophotography specific cameras that are modded before purchase, because astrophotography is a huge, amateur astrophotography is huge in photography now. And especially with cameras like the EOS RA, the big thing that Canon is trying to do is get into that high quality astro camera market, because astro cameras are expensive. And the really high quality ones are almost unbeatable. There's CMOS cameras with like 60 megapixels. They have no screens. They don't look like cameras, but they are, oh my God, they're beasts. And they're monochrome. I use two of them every single clear night, and it's fun. It's fun, I'll say that. Like cameras, a lens or a telescope is necessary for astrophotography. Any lens can be used for astrophotography, no matter the focal length. I use 10 to 18 millimeter lenses and 50 millimeter lenses. Popular cheap yet high quality lenses for astrophotography include the Rokinon 135 millimeter f2, the Rokinon 14 millimeter f2.8, the Rokinon 85 millimeter f1.4, I've used that, and the Canon EF telephoto 200 millimeter f2.8. That's not cheap though. More expensive lenses popular with astrophotography include the EF 14mm f2.8L, the Canon EF 35mm f1.4L, the Sigma 14-24mm f2.8, and the Canon EF 16-35mm f2.8L. In terms of telescopes, there's no such thing as a popular astrophotography telescope because everyone has a different one. Redcat 51, a lot of the more cheap ones are really popular. The Redcat 51 is a good example. I have one, so that speaks truth to that. On the more expensive side, I've seen this StellarView 130mm f7 refractor. I've seen that be very popular. On the high end, the 11-inch Celestron Edge HD is pretty popular. That's when you're getting into, like, the CDKs are always really popular. CDK 17 and 20 inches, they're generally really popular, all the way up to 24. Those are really popular. You'll see them often in the in Astrobin specifically. Astrobin is the more advanced site. But yeah, of course you're going to need a tracking mount. They follow the stars as Earth rotates about its axis. And as the star appear to move across the sky, most star trackers do so by aligning with the pole star Polaris and using the star's reference point. Simple trackers, thankfully, are not exceptionally expensive. Popular star trackers include the Sky Tracker Pro, which I have, the Sky Guider Pro, again, which I have, the Skywatcher Star Adventurer Pro, and the Fornax LightTrack 2. Popular advanced ones include Astrophysics Mach 2 GTO, Astrophysics 1600 GTO, that's really high end though, 1100 GTO, a lot of the Paramount ones. I believe it's like an MX2 or something. I'm not really educated on Paramount. Paramount has a lot of very popular mounts. There are many in the end. the EQ8R Pro, the EQ8RH Pro, EQ6R Pro, all of them are pretty popular. Any tripod will do for astrophotography, but once you have a compiled, significant, and heavy equipment, a large, sturdy mount is practically imperative. For a large observatory setup, piers are, in my opinion, necessary. Piers are large metal blocks that attach to the ground, generally concrete, and hold entire astrophotography setups. A link in the bibliography gives some examples. Most telescope piers are permanent mounts, not piers on tripods, though. For those living in light-polluted cities and communities, light pollution filters are necessary for one to extract any deep sky objects in an image. To avoid light pollution, astrophotographers use light pollution filters. These are filters that block out mainly the light emanating from sodium vapor lamps, but at the expense of some signal, light pollution filters block out most light pollution and increase contrast, allowing for greater nebulosity regardless of the location. I actually use light pollution filters in Bortle 4 skies to get increased nebulosity. Unfortunately, light pollution filters are ineffective against broad-spectrum lamps, which are becoming increasingly common and will probably just take over everything. For now, though, these filters are the cheapest form of astrophotographic defense against light pollution. Popular light pollution filters include the Astronomic CLS, which I used to have, but I sold, and the Optolong L Pro. That's one thing about astrophotography. You don't just, like, keep the stuff at your house once you're done with it. You sell it. You sell it immediately. Because you need all the money that you can to buy more astrophotography gear. But yeah, there's some more advanced necessary and unnecessary hardware that you may need. Telescope, of course, if you're more advanced. A computer, generally with the more high-end mounts, you're going to need a computer to run the telescope and everything. Most mounts, most really high-duty, heavy-duty mounts are computerized. You'll need software programs like SGP, the Sky 10, etc. I like Stellarium and Sky 10 for planetarium systems. Sequence Generator Pro is good for Sequence. Voyager, Nina, Sequence Generator Pro, sorry. Those are really good for sequencing. A lot of the good processing software include like Deep Sky Stacker, Nebulosity, Sequator, Adobe Photoshop, Lightroom, PixInsight. PixInsight is by far the best. AstroPixel processor, the CCD stack and CCD editing softwares. You might want a cooled camera. CMOS is generally better than CCD now, but yeah. Advanced filters like narrowband filters and RGB filters. This is generally recommended for a monochrome camera. We generally use monochrome cameras in astrophotography, so we don't really get purely true images unless we're doing RGB. RGB is a true color image, but narrowband is not. You might want filter wheels, auto guiders. Auto guiders help improve the mount's tracking accuracy. Barlows and focal reducers. We have a focal reducer on the 14-inch Celestron Edge HD, particularly because 3,910mm is way too far out. Barlows increase focal length, focal reducers decrease it. You might want a focuser, like an electronic focuser. We have moonlight focusers at the observatory and a starlight, or like a star zona, I think. Rotators, I have two rotators actually in my house. I have two rotators myself. Coma corrector, this is more advanced if you're using a reflector. Most people who are advanced into astrophotography don't use, or do use coma correctors. If they are, if they're not, they don't, because they generally don't have reflectors. You might want a field flattener, we discussed that, or dome, and even a roll-off roof. These are permanent observatories. A lot of people I know have them. I should say it that way. A lot. But anyway, first of all, if you have Astrobin, Astrophotography's Instagram, follow me. This is just the conclusion. My name is at William Gottemaller, so there you go. Now that I've learned G-Scope, our observatory's largest and most advanced telescope system, I've been able to image some incredible objects. With my images, I may actually be able to conduct research. that could contribute to the field of astronomy. Astrophotography, like astronomy, is a humbling and character-building experience, one that proves to us the formidability of our skies and the insignificance of our species. Because of the amount of equipment that comes into advanced astrophotography setups, there's quite a lot more equipment than represented in this chapter. Other sections, including sections on processing techniques and imaging sessions, were not included. But yeah. Anyway, thank you all for listening to the final episode of this kind of series. And as always, have a good morning, afternoon, evening, and night. Take care and stay curious.